Talk about Spinoza. Again, this piece is a difficult piece, and it is it takes holding your head because his Hebrew is difficult and his sentences are long. But I really think it's really worth it because these are like some of the most important keys, and I'm even thinking that this stuff should be taught in Shana Aleph, but it would be too hard for them, and it is not translating to English, and it would be a really monumental work for someone to translate this into English. So whatever, Be'et Chadasha, in this new age, B'shor Shor Shah Pagsha Kol Mehuma Elilit Et Chelkei Nechshalei Amenu. So what he's saying is that the confusion of Elilit, which is idolatry, right? The root of Avodah Zorah and the confusion of Avodah Zorah has met with the more primitive chevra of our nation, right? Nachshalei are kind of backwards thinking people. And it ended up landing on Spinoza, okay? So he's kind of describing like a process. Something's been happening. It wasn't just simply Spinoza came up with this, right? But there was a certain, you know, a certain leftover of a spirit of Avodah Zorah, which became, which the more primitive chevra of our nation started to become very attracted to, and it became formalized by Spinoza. But Spinoza is kind of like a movement that becomes manifest through this man. But it wasn't. There was an environment that was developing for him to come up with what he was saying. Yeah.
Is this from Cook's writing?
Yeah.
Where is that?
This is Dat Elohim. We're just continuing. Okay. You see, Spinoza was a descendant of the Anusim. In Spain, the people that were called in Hebrew, in English, what were the Anusim called? The Moranos. Right? These were Jews that pretended they weren't Jewish. And the community where he was in Amsterdam, his parents were descendants, or maybe even were Anusim, I don't know, I'm not the history guy. But so there was this incredible feeling of guilt, and apparently, you know, because they felt very guilty about how they kind of publicly acknowledged themselves as Christians when privately they practiced their Judaism. And so what I heard is that there was this very machmir energy of kind of like, because of guilt, they're kind of going to make up for it and being like frummer than frum. So, and he also lost his father at a young age, Spinoza. So, you know, there's certain political, historical, and emotional, psychological elements in place here. But the point is, what did Spinoza do? So he says, "Shenit gal gela biyichud besimiyut ayin vihitnakrut leteva yudi shebikirbo." So there's this kind of new thinking that came through Spinoza, that essentially was the product of blindness and estranging ourselves from the nature of the Jew within him. In other words, Spinoza is a guy, he's a Jewish fellow, Orthodox home, and he basically, Rav Kook is saying through, so to speak, let's say, blindness and becoming estranged to his true Jewishness. L'kolach b'chot levi avanat rov ha'olam bo shehi tolda muchrechet b'signono. He says, it seems, the way he's read and understood, to have been blind and to become alienated from the Judaism within him. Okay? So Rav Kook is being very kind here. He's saying that maybe this is not exactly what Spinoza meant. Maybe it's the way people read Spinoza, but it's still his fault because of the way he wrote, right? So his writing was of such that it allowed for the possibility if they're misreading him. So Rav Kook is being very, you know, dan l'kav schut as much as possible, of saying that, you know, so he says, l'kol ha'bachot, at least the way most people understood his writings, but the way most people understood his writings was the product of the way his style. So if they misunderstood him, it is his fault, right? Because he wrote in a style that basically compelled that misunderstanding. Okay? But okay, so now we're now up to two. And what was it? What came out of him? Letzet chutz mimakor ha'chaim shel idealim Elohim. He stepped out of the source of life of divine ideals. Lachzor l'nikudat ha'katnut v'yaldut. And he returned to the perspective, the viewpoint of childishness. V'hu davke l'mashem mufla u'mechusa. He was going back to that which is hidden and wondrous. And what is that? Latzmut Elohim. Rav Kook has been building up to this. Rav Kook, as you remember in the beginning, is saying that children think they grasp things as they are. They don't have the refined understanding that there's the thing as it is, and then there's the thing as it appears relative to you in the language that you understand. Okay? And so there's the objective reality, and then there's your subjective reality. And you can never know reality as it is. You can only know reality as it appears relative to you. So you will always be in your subjective realm. You will always be in the subjective as you meet the objective. And the objective is being translated according to the limitations of your subjective mind. Okay? Well, children don't know that. From their point of view, the table is the table. It is what it is. And there isn't this fancy philosophical, you know, nuance here of the table as it is versus the table as it appears to me. And the table as it really is, I will never know. Okay? So he's saying that really what happened is that Spinoza started thinking like a kid. Right? That his philosophy is based on not understanding the difference between knowing Hashem as He is and knowing Hashem as He appears to us. And how does He appear to us? Through His ways, through His values, through His ideals, through His name. Right? A name is relative. I'm Rabbi Aaron. But where does Rabbi Aaron live? In your minds, right? Because without a student, there is no rabbi. So, therefore, all you know about me is that I am one that believes in wisdom and spreading wisdom. Okay, so if you are committed to me, so to speak, and you were to serve me, then you would be serving me as I appear to you, which is a teacher who spreads wisdom, and you would live my ideals to spread wisdom. Do you follow that? Okay. So what Rav Kook is saying is that basically Spinoza is an Avodah Zoronik, right? That idolatry was childish thinking, whereby these people had the childish approach to think they know what the gods are. They've defined the gods. That's God. Right? That's God and that's God. And then Rav Kook is saying that essentially Spinoza was the biggest Avodah Zoronik around. Okay? Because the other Avodah Zoroniks, they said the sun is God. They said the moon is God. They had a bunch of different gods. But what did Spinoza say? What is Avodah Zorah about what Spinoza said? He said, all is God. All is God. Well, what's so bad about that? What's wrong with saying all is God? Don't we say that? All is God. We never say that. We say God is all and infinitely more than that. Right? The God is all. He's manifest to us as all. But in truth, He's beyond all that. Right? Subjectively, He's manifest as the all. But objectively, He will always be beyond all that. And that's the incredible distinction between being a Torah Jew, true to your inner Jewish soul, and Avodah Zorah. Right? Avodah Zorah. Yeah.
Philosophically, is that the difference between pantheism and panentheism?
Exactly. Right. Pantheism, Spinoza was a pantheist.
Is that for sure that Spinoza was a pantheist?
Well, he's saying the way most people understood him, but then again, it's his fault because the way he wrote basically compelled them to understand it that way. Although he's willing to say maybe Spinoza didn't quite mean what they think he says, so he says, we don't know exactly what Spinoza was saying, right? But this is what he was interpreted. This is the influence of his writings on the world. And so I'm not attacking the man himself, but his writings allowed for this, and he's going to explain why the Amsterdam community was absolutely right to put him into Cherem. Okay? He's going to talk about that. Yeah.
If all that we can experience is the perception of Hashem in this world, then...
No. You're experiencing Hashem, but you're perceiving your perception. Remember, when you bite into an apple, you are meeting the essence behind the apple. But you're experiencing, right, or you're tasting sweetness. Right? So you have to be careful not to separate the perception from the encounter. The reason why you have a perception is because there is a real encounter. Okay? When you meet Hashem, right, you are meeting, so to speak, David Aaron. But you are perceiving Rabbi Aaron. Okay?
Okay. So if all we really perceive is just perception.
Okay.
Then practically, is there any difference between what Spinoza is saying and what we say?
Oh my gosh, a huge difference. Because we're not ever saying we're going to define God. Right? As soon as you define God, he's going to soon explain what is the terrible disaster that came out of defining God. Children think they can define, so the table is a table. Right? I can say, I don't know what the table is. I just know how the table appears to me. Okay? I'm not defining the table. I'm just defining how the table appears to me, but not how the table actually is. But if I say that's what the table is, what basically happens to me and the table? Right, we talked about that for quite a while. What happens? It turns the table into what?
Into a separate object.
Exactly. If I say the table, the brownness of the table, the squareness of the table, the hard texture of the table, where does all that happen?
In my mind.
That's all happening in my mind. That lives in my subjective world. So it's a part of me. The table as it is, which is beyond me, I have no perception of. I just know that there is a table, there's an essence, and I will never know it as it is, only as it appears to me. So the table that I know will never be strange to me. It will be never separate from me. It will never be alien from me. It'll be a part of me. But if I think the table as I see it is the way it is, so there's a table over there and there's me, and now there's separation, and it's a strange object. Okay? So essentially, what did Spinoza do? He turned Hashem into El Zar. And that is the buzzword of this entire article. That is Hashem an El Zar? Is Hashem a strange, alien, foreign being somewhere over there telling me what to do? Because if he is, then what happens?
Not connected at all.
And so what?
And then you fear.
I live under fear. I resent. I feel being overwhelmed. I'm starting to be controlled. I'm losing myself. Right? So as soon as Spinoza says, I got it. God is everything. God is nature. There he is. We know what he is. He's nature. Okay? So. Everything is God. So, I'm not connected. Well, and if everything is God, if nature is God, he asks nothing of me. Right? He has no purpose. Nature is just nature. It's not going anywhere particularly. So, he's a pantheist. We're a panentheist. A panentheist says all is included within God, and he's saying all is God. Okay, so he has done the most bold most chutzpahdik definition of God, but he has defined God. And as soon as you define God and think you're defining him as he is, you have separated him from us, and you've now turned God into an Elzar. If you say, late mechshavat tfisabei, I don't know what Hashem is, I don't know who Hashem is, I only know how Hashem appears to me, and how does he appear to me? Through his midos, and so my life is about living his midos. So that was it. That was huge. So that's the danger of Spinoza. He basically reverted to childish thinking, did not understand the distinction, the Kantian distinction between noumena and phenomena, between etzem and toar, appearance. And so he's trying to touch the etzem. The baby wants to touch the thing as it is. He puts it in his mouth. He thinks, I got it. I grabbed it. This is it. Right? And so Rav Kook is saying that this was a philosopher that was actually thinking like a child. You know? Yeah.
So firstly, thank you for answering my question. Is it possible that pantheism is just the extreme version of monotheism?
No. Monotheism is God is a single being somewhere over there. He's over there. So that's pure transcendence. Right, pantheism is pure immanence. Right? God and the universe are one and the same. So there is no transcendent being. When you have the Kantian understanding, so I understand that something about this table is transcendent, beyond. Beyond what?
Beyond our perception.
Exactly, beyond my perception. So the transcendental side of the table is the essence, which is beyond my perception, but the table as I see it, and the only table I know, is within my perception. So that's the immanence within my perception, and the transcendence beyond my perception. But if you essentially nullify these distinctions, like he did, I mean, he didn't even know these distinctions, he wasn't Kantian, so he basically said, the universe is nature. God is nature. Nature is God. There we are. We got it. That's it. Right. So once you turn God into nature, there are terrible implications, which he's going to talk about. And basically, Rav Kook says that Spinoza was the father of secularism. Right? And Chiloniyut is because of him. And how ultimately, he actually even traces anti-Semitism because of Spinoza. Not that this was his intention, but these were the implications of what he said. Right? Because he basically presented the most alienating God of all. Right? An impersonal, uncaring, separate entity defined by man as nature.
So
nature doesn't care about me. Nature doesn't request of me. Nature is not invested in me. Right? Nature is not moral. Right? So if God is nature, then we're really in big trouble.
So, sorry.
Yeah.
I think it's just interesting that our conclusion from that, for our relationship between us and Hashem, if it was according to pantheism or monotheism, is that God is this other being besides us that is completely foreign to us. And then it's interesting that through both of those methods, you kind of come to the same conclusion, even though one's, oh, he's everything, and he's like a single. Like, we're still objectifying him either way. We're just saying one's just like a larger version of himself.
Oh, they might have the same impact. They might have the same impact. But monotheism is personifying God. There is this person being invisible man somewhere over there in heaven. But pantheism is saying the universe, which is not personal, nature, which is not personal, is God. So God is not personal, has no will. Nature has no will. Nature doesn't want, doesn't choose, isn't free. So basically, God is a robot. God is a mechanism. Yeah?
So not the the truth behind your Kivalke, which is late Moshavet Fisabe, but when I say Hashem, which is like my perception, couldn't that lead it to that so many perceptions of God?
Yes. And as long as we know it's a perception, it's okay. That's why it's Eloheinu. Elohei Avraham, how Yudkei Vavkei became manifest to Avraham, and Avraham became the channel for Ha'el Gadol, and then Yudkei Vavkei become manifest too. So we say, Baruch Atah Hashem, may there be an increased manifestation of you, the objective reality, as you are manifest as Eloheinu, our God, right? And so, in those words, Hashem Eloheinu is Yudkei Vavkei is Hashem, so to speak, from his perspective, which is the objective. And Eloheinu is Hashem from our perspective as he appears to us, relative to us, and according to our limited perceptual capacity. So Avram brought into the world the truth of Hashem being Chesed. So he promoted the ideal of Chesed. Yitzchak brought into the world Hakel Gadol. So he was promoting the ideal of Gvura. And Yaakov brought into the world Hakel Hanorah. He was promoting the implications of Nora, which is a balance between Chesed and Gvura, whatever. But it goes back to the ideals of God, right? But basically, Spinoza simply ripped off of God and from the world any ideals whatsoever. Is there anything idealistic about nature? No. In fact, and I mentioned to you that I try regularly, I'm trying daily to kind of look at these nature clips, 2-minute nature clips. But I'm finding a frustration that I can't find almost any that are not vicious, right? Like a lot of these clips from National Geographic or BBC Earth are about lions and how they hunt and fish, how they pursue other fish. And it's almost like the entertainment is the same entertainment as all drama, which is violence, right? And you see the violence in nature, right? Nature is violent, okay? And so when Hitler said, we read Hitler the other day, where he said that it's the Jews that are saying you can transcend nature, okay? So, but we can't, he says. You can't transcend nature. We are barbarians. We are proud of it. Because if you are part of nature and nature is God, so then there is no place for ideals. There are no place for yearning for values, right?
That sounds like
music. Yes. Well, so that's what Rav Kook basically says, that the Shoah is the ultimate outcome. The roots of that is the way you think. As soon as you make God into nature, right, and you've turned God into a complete stranger, because he has no interest in you. He has no connection to you, right? So that's a real stranger. You know, this guy's such a stranger. It's like when people say, you know, my father's a stranger, because they feel that their father doesn't pay any attention to them and is not in their life and doesn't care about their lives, and he's just a complete stranger. So Spinoza created the greatest ilzar ever, right? Which is nature. So if you go on the other side of the page, it's called the Pinkas. The Rav Kook had a Pinkas, which was a notepad, and he would write notes. And so they've published his notes. He didn't write them for anybody. They're kind of his own personal notes. So, but on the bottom, I brought a list of the difference between Spinoza versus Chassidus. Because there were those that blamed Chassidus that it's astounding that maybe this is Spinoza. So definitely not. So for Spinoza, God and nature are one. For Chassidus, nature is not God. Right? Now, I could say that God is nature, but nature is not God. Because God is infinitely more than nature, and God is manifest as nature. The name Elohim correlates to Hateva. Right? The nature. Right? So the gematria of Elohim is the nature. Yeah, so Hashem is manifest that way. Nature exists eternally, according to Spinoza. And according to Chassidus, nature was created. Okay? Now, if nature existed eternally, what are the moral implications of that? It came from nowhere. And if it came from nowhere, it was never created with any particular purpose. It just always was. right? So, according to Spinoza, God is only immanent. According to Hasidus, God is both immanent and transcendent. Okay? According to Spinoza, nature is God with no purpose. Nature doesn't have a purpose. Science never asks the question, well, what's the purpose of all this? Science just describes this is how it behaves. But not this is why it behaves. For what purpose does it behave this way? And according to Hasidus, God created the world to fulfill his purpose. According to Spinoza, everything's deterministic. Because nature's deterministic. You're part of nature. This is just nature. There's no free will. Right? There's no free will. But of course, according to Torah, you know, Hashem can suspend the laws of nature, and things are not deterministic. And according to Spinoza, man is not really free. And according to Hasidus, man has free will. So these are stark, you know, differences between what Hasidus was teaching and what Spinoza was teaching. But there were those that were claiming that the Hasidic movement was, they were afraid that it was Spinoza. Yeah.
So what is, when Spinoza says nature exists eternally, what is it, what is that, what does nature mean in the context of that? I mean, like just,
meaning all this always existed. There was always trees, there was always the ocean, there was always the sun. It was never created. Now, it's not so long ago that now his, you know, scientists definitely say there was a beginning to the universe. But before that, there was no beginning.
Does Spinoza adhere to the Greek idea of the universe always existing?
Yeah. Always was, always will be, with no purpose, with no freedom. So if nature is God, then who are you going to talk to? Nature? Who are you going to thank? Nature? Who are you going to respond to? Nature? So he turned God into the most alienating, most foreign being of all. He's not interested in your life at all. Couldn't care less.
From the perspective of language and dualism, I understand totally how this, like, the Jewish point of view and Spinoza's point of view is totally contrast each other. But from the perspective of Ein Oid Ben Vadoi, then language falls away. So even if you say nature, you said before that you could say nature is God, but you can't.
No, I never
say
said
God.
Nature is God.
No, you said that you could say, but you can't say God is nature.
No, you can. You can say God is nature, but nature is not God. Just like I can say David Aaron is Rabbi Aaron, but Rabbi Aaron is not David Aaron. Right?
Right.
So when you see me, you see a rabbi. And you only see rabbi. You don't know, you will never know me. You don't want to. Right? You will never know me other than as a teacher. Okay? But is this teacher floating in midair? Rabbi Aaron is one of the faces of David Aaron. But Rabbi Aaron exists only relative to you. Because if there wasn't a student, there would be no rabbi. Okay? So that's called Shemot Hashem. A Shem means there's an other that's perceiving, and that Shem is only real in the subjective world of the other. Okay? So all the Shemot of Hashem are telling me that the God I'm talking about is only Hashem as he appears to me, relative to me, as he lives inside my subjective world. Okay, but objectively, he's beyond all that. Okay.
But then we also say Ein Sof as well. We also say Ein Oid Ben Vadoi as well as that.
Yeah, no, but Ein Sof means that beyond time and space. That's the objective, right? That I will never ever grasp Hashem. So it'll be Ein Sof.
But doesn't Ein Sof also include also the immanence of God? So not just the beyond aspect, but also the immanence aspect.
That's because your subjective mind is also chilek elokam imam. So, but that doesn't change the point here. But yes, the Shechina, which is the root of the subjective world, is a part of the objective reality, which we're going to talk about at another time in greater depth. But okay, so let's read number 117. Rav Kook says this a little bit later, but we'll bring it up right now. He says, the Spinozic system with its flaws is the complete opposite of Israelite. Therefore, the hand of Hashem, in feeling, was on the righteous rabbis in Amsterdam to distance him from Israel. So this is very interesting. He says that, and he also says it here, in the Hebrew, if you look at 6, Yad Hashem haita al roshei ha'edai Amsterdamit. It was the hand of Hashem on the heads of the congregation of Amsterdam. Az lotzi me'aklal et mi shechashav lashkiach et the idealiyut shel kriya b'shem Hashem. Let's get rid of this guy, right? Because what this guy is doing is he's uprooting the very point of Judaism, which is to live Hashem's ideals, which is aroused by calling the name of Hashem and not trying to define Hashem, right? If you define Hashem, then that's what he is. And now how is that going to inspire me for ideals, right? I've defined him. That's what he is. He's nature, okay? But is there a shame Hashem? I can call to Hashem. And when I call to Hashem, it's Hashem as he appears to me. And how does he appear to me? Through his ideals. And therefore serving Hashem and calling to Hashem arouses me to want to get close to him through his ideals. But Spinoza just basically deleted all idealism, right? Now you've got a God that does not arouse idealism at all, right? Nature does not arouse idealism, okay? So in English over here, he says, so again, the same thing, therefore the hand of Hashem in feeling was on the righteous rabbis in Amsterdam to distance him from Israel. Meaning, they didn't themselves know why they were getting rid of him. This Rav Kook is saying that it's possible they didn't even understand what he was saying. They just had this intuition, something's off with this guy, that this guy is dangerous, that the long-term impact of what this guy is saying is going to be devastating. But Rav Kook is saying they didn't quite understand what he was saying. They just knew this guy is krum, right? We got to get rid of this guy. So he's saying that it was, you know, when people say, oh, those Amsterdam rabbis, they didn't have the brilliance of they couldn't understand them. The guy was one of the most brilliant people on the planet. So they were wrong. Rav Kook is saying, they weren't wrong, right? Because this was Hashkacha Hashem that filled their being and told them, get this guy out of here. It created the modern era up to all the atrocities, including anti-Semitism, right? That Spinoza is the root of the atrocities, including anti-Semitism. Because basically, when the world now has a philosophy that is against idealism, then you've got the Colosseum, right? But now it's not just it's not just a Yetzer Hara. It's a systematic, philosophical, rational system that there's just nature. And what's going to come out of that is the implications of a Hitler saying we are barbarians and we can't transcend nature. Because there's nowhere to go beyond nature. There's nowhere to go beyond nature. And is nature idealistic? Are animals kind? Do you ever expect a lion, would it be right to even go up to a lion and say, you know, that's not nice. I mean, that lamb, what, you know, poor little lamb. You know, like, where's your empathy? Where is it? Where, how could you do that? Right? You'd be evil. You're evil. You're going against nature. Right? That lion has every right to do that. I remember I saw a National Geographic, I think I told you this. It was these two whales that were playing with a seal, right? And they were whipping the seal like meters across and catching it. And this poor seal, you see it suffering. And that was their game. The game was to torture baby seals and turn them into their tennis ball. And you just see viciousness, you know. So he says that they sensed that we don't know what this guy's saying, but somehow the ruach a ruach kodesh told them, get him out of here. Okay, so apparently recently there was a group that wanted to lift the cherem from Spinoza, a Jewish group of I think professors. They wanted to because asked him for mechila. Right. They apologized to him for what the Jewish community did to him. Well, Rav Kook is not apologizing. Rav Kook saying that whether he meant it or not, right, his writings allowed for this and they had to get rid of him. Okay. So, and if he would have not distanced, if he would not have been distanced, he would have mixed with the Israeli collective and create barren works that would have been received like the guide to the perplexed, the Kuzari. What was Rav Kook saying? That if they wouldn't have got rid of him, then who would Spinoza become?
A Jewish philosopher.
That's right. He'd be in the Rambam, the Kuzari. His works were so could have so easily melted into Judaism, right? And he says, along with that, he would have probably created some halachic innovations matching his skill, which should have caused his opinions regarding the divine to be accepted as well. Because look, he's from. He's got halacha. But essentially, he has said something about God that really takes the very foundation of Judaism away. And they would have, heaven forbid, blast the foundations of the enemies of Israel, the enemy of Israel. Blasted mean he would have given them a blast, meaning that they would have given him, he would have launched them into orbit, right? Although those consequences would only be discovered after many days in events. In other words, the consequences of what he was going, what he's saying, is only going to come out much later. And it was the Ruach Elohim that inspired the Amsterdam to have that foresight that what he's saying is going to end up being disastrous. Yes.
Because in the first line, it seems to say that there's some sort of inner taiva that we have to this Spinoza type of way of thinking, that's like rooted in this confusion of paganism and this primitive sense.
It's the child in you. The child wants to know the table as it is. And the adult has to remind you, you will never know the table as it is. You can only know it as it relates to you, right? And that's good, because when you know the table as it is, it's now you and it. When you know the table as it appears to you, then the table that you know is a part of you, and now you're one with the table. Even though you philosophically know that there's an essence that transcends that. But even that is good. What's good about knowing that the object transcends your perception? What's the advantage of that? He's going to say this soon, but we'll.
So it's good to be a child and an adult.
Yes. The child yearns for the essence, and the adult reminds him that you will always remain within the realm of the subjective. Right? So why is it good to yearn for the essence?
We want to be close to a child.
Because then the journey never ends. It's called Ein Sof. Right, because as long as you know that Hashem is beyond your grasp, and yet you still within your reach, you will continue to reach, and you will grow. And that's the pasuk: Yismach Lev Mevakshei Hashem. Happy is the heart that seeks God, but miserable is the heart that finds God. Right? Spinoza found God. Here he is. Found him. There he is. Put him in an aquarium. That's him, right? Right? That's not joy. What gives us joy? The ability to forever evolve with new chidushim and new revelations and new expanded perceptions. So that's why science is never going to get to the object. Science is never going to end, right? They're going to have a microscope, and then they're going to have a double zoomy microscope, and then a million times zoom, and then a billion times zoom. Are they ever going to hit bedrock? No. Because they're always within the realm of the subjective. And the objective will always be beyond them. Right? Rabbi Nachman has a vision of a guy on a bird. And the way he gets the bird to fly is he's got like a fishing pole with a carrot. Right? So the way he gets the bird to fly is the bird goes for the carrot and he lifts it up a little more. So then the bird goes even higher up and he lifts it up a little more. So that's the point. Baruch atah Hashem, blessed are you Hashem, you as you are revealed to me, Elokeinu, he who is, he disappears. Right? It's in your bracha. Every time you make a bracha, you acknowledge Hashem as being present and then hidden. It's Baruch atah Hashem, Elokeinu, Melech haolam, asher kidishanu mitzvotav. How did I get to mitzvotav? It should have said what? Mitzvotecha. So why does it say mitzvotav? Because I realize that Hashem is very present subjectively, but he's very transcendent objectively. And so I yearn to come closer and make a little bit more subjective, and the journey goes on. And that's what Rav Kook is going to say. So then essentially what Spinoza did is he killed progress. Because that's it. Got it. So Cook says that he is the father of theology. That basically he turned God into a study. We study God, we put him under a microscope, we look at him in a telescope, there he is, got it. Now what? Let's go do something that's exciting. Let's go something that offers us innovation constantly. So we'll continue this tomorrow. You can ask me questions privately.
So,